Okay, well, this week there's another exercise that I want to suggest for you. And this is actually quite similar to the exercise that I talked about last week in the midweek video. And this exercise is taking the meaning away with, it's sort of like withdrawing the way that our minds attach meaning to everything. Now that may, for some of you, may seem a little frightening or a little intimidating, but there's something underneath meaning, all the ways we give meaning to things, that's actually much more beautiful than meaning. So, give you an example. The way our minds attach meaning to everything, it becomes so habitual, so programmed into our system as we grow up that we almost don't even know that we're doing it. We literally don't even know that what we're doing. It's just so automatic that we are assigning meaning to everything. You know, somebody looks at you a particular way, and you immediately start to tell yourself a story about, why did they look at me that way? What does it mean that they looked at me that way? Do they like me? Do they not like me? Are they approving of me? Are they disapproving of me? These are all ways that the mind is searching for the correct meaning of an experience or a correct interpretation. So for this exercise, we're not only withdrawing meaning, we're also withdrawing interpretation. We're drawing that from your moment-to-moment experience. Let's just take something really, really basic. Let's say you are meditating, for example. Could be anything. It could be driving a car, walking down the street, doing the dishes, but we'll just say you've decided to sit down and spend some time in silence, sometimes called meditating. And imagine that when you sit down, your mind is a bit busy. And you're sitting there and you're meditating and your mind is busy, and your mind starts to then comment on its own busyness. Oh, my mind's busy. That must mean that I'm not very spiritually advanced. I'm not really getting anywhere. This is a waste of time. This isn't something that I should be doing. I'm really not very good at meditating, and the reason I know that is because my mind is busy. These are all ways that the mind assigns a kind of meaning or significance to something as simple than just sitting there and your mind's a little busy. Imagine if you were meditating, your mind was a little busy, and your mind was just a little busy, which means you didn't assign any meaning to it. If it's busy, it's just busy, and that's it. No further story, let's say. No further narrative. No meaning is being derived from the busyness of your mind, negative or positive meaning. It's just a day or a moment where your mind is busy, and it doesn't mean anything other than your mind being busy. Imagine that. So we take something really simple like that. Or let's say you have a feeling, you feel some, you, for some reason you don't even understand, you walking down the sidewalk or whatever, and you feel a kind of just simple, peaceful ease. You just feel at peace, you know? You just feel quite undisturbed. Now, you could just have the experience of being at peace. Or your mind could assign it meaning, right? Like, oh, I'm at peace. That must mean whatever story you want to tell yourself. If my mind is at peace, maybe I'm actually starting to get somewhere spiritually, you know? Or maybe it means that my mind, that I'm just about to have some spiritual breakthrough. Or, you know, you could tell yourself literally, and you could assign an infinite variety of meanings to something as simple as your state just being at peace. So this probably seems like something very simple, but when you actually do it, when you apply it throughout a day, when you start to withhold meaning, which means, you know, you can't necessarily stop your mind from assessing meaning, but you can stop from believing in it. You can just remind yourself that a thought is just a thought, that's all. And a feeling is just a feeling. I don't need to tell myself a long story about a feeling. Just experience it, it as what it is. It's just a feeling. An emotion could be positive, like love or joy. Could be negative, anxiety or fear. But can you actually experience these things without assigning a secondary meaning to them, without creating a whole significance about them? So, of course, when we have wonderful experiences, we tend to assign a very wonderful meaning to them, right? In other words, we tell ourselves a good story when we feel good. When we feel bad, we tend to tell ourselves a negative story. We assign a negative meaning. Oh, I feel rotten. This means that I'm not getting anywhere. This means that I'm not doing it correctly. This means that, you know, I'm really not as spiritually adept as I thought I was, you know. And so this is how our mind just habitually has been literally programmed to assign each moment a kind of meaning, a kind of significance. And by doing this, we live in a kind of virtual reality. We're not really living in the world of what I call suchness or what isness. We're living in the world of the secondary meaning and the story that our minds is telling us about our experience. So we're not living in direct experience, we're living in our interpretation of our experience. This exercise is about removing the interpretation and the meaning from experience. So if it's hot, it's just hot. What's it like for it just to be hot? If it's cold, it's just cold. It's not good to be cold. It's not bad to be cold. It's not right or wrong. It's just cold. And if you play with this a little bit, throughout the day, and just notice how your mind assesses meaning, how your mind creates its little stories about so many of the moments of your life, and that these stories are abstractions. In other words, they're only happening in your mind, right? They're only happening in your mind, and your mind is translating experience into a sort of conceptual overlay. So by removing meaning, we're removing the conceptual overlay. Because the conceptual overlay gets between you and the world of suchness and what is. And this, well, the reason why we're doing this exercise, because when self falls away, the translator falls away. That experience is no longer being translated. That there is, when self really falls away, there isn't an imagined self which is assigning meaning, positive or negative, to each moment of life. That just falls away, it disappears. And what you're left with is the world of suchness, the world of isness, things as they really are. And things as they really are not our interpretation of them, are not the meaning that we assign to things. See, we've been taught is that almost the meaning we assign to a given event is more real and more true than the actual event. That the way that our mind translates our experience is more real and more true than the actual experience itself. And this has profound consequences when it comes to our lives. Because if we're always living in that, in our imagination, that which is deriving meaning and significance, positively or negatively, to each moment of life, we're literally living in an abstract world. We're living in a dream, literally. We're existing, we're having experience, and yet what we're really focused on is the story we have about what's happening. And that story is not what's really happening. The story is not what's really happening. The narrative, the narrator of your experience, that's not what's really happening. That's the dream. We often feel that whatever our current narration of an event is, our idea of it is actually the truth. That's part of the programming, right? But it really isn't the truth. It's just the way you're programmed to translate a given experience or, you know, a given encounter into a story, into a narrative. The narrative is not really true. So in other words, like I held up last week, this glass of water. Nothing I say about this glass of water will be more true or more real than taking a simple drink from it. If I want to know what this water is, no amount of talking to myself about this water, whether it's good or bad or right or wrong, or the endless stories I could tell myself and you about a glass of water, none of those are as real as tasting the water. Now, the taste of water is not something you can put into an idea. I could talk for a month unendingly about what water tastes like. But if you've never tasted water, you'll never know what water tastes like. Even if you're an expert in what water tastes like conceptually, you still won't know. That seems really obvious when it comes to the taste of water or what an orange tastes like or a banana tastes like. You know, if somebody hasn't tasted these things, you could talk indefinitely and they'll still never know what it tastes like until they taste it themselves. But in order to taste it themselves, they've got to at least entertain the possibility that everything they know about it, everything they think and believe about it, isn't nearly as true as the actual taste. So when you do this exercise throughout the day, removing meaning and removing the narrator from experience. By removing, I don't mean you forcibly suppress it. I mean you just start to notice that there is direct experience, direct sensory experience, and then everything you think about that experience. And you're just shifting your attention to direct experience rather than your interpretation of experience. You could do this even when you're engaging with somebody else in a moment of relationship. What's it like to be with them, to say talk with them, without getting lost in your own narration? Seeing that what you think about what they're saying is not as real as what they're saying is. Let me repeat that. What you think about what someone is saying to you is not nearly as real as what they're actually saying to you. Imagine that. Usually in communication, we translate what people say to us so quickly and so automatically that the only thing we hear is what we think about what somebody else said. In other words, our our interpretation of what someone else said. No, it's no wonder why human beings have such a hard time communicating with each other. And they're constantly misunderstanding each other. Mostly it's because we're not actually listening to each other. We're listening to what we think that someone said. Our evaluation about what they said. Our judgment about what they said. Rather than what they're simply saying. Now, a kind of exercise like this can give you, you know, a little, can get you closer to what it's like to live, to perceive without that self in the center, without the narrator. Because that's one of the things that this imagined self is, that it's a constant narrator of events. When self disappears, the narrator disappears. And you're in the world of suchness, things simply as they are. That may sound boring to the mind, but things as they are actually extraordinary. They're divine. There's a timeless reality that shines through them. That each moment, it's as if each moment is filled with a kind of infinity, a kind of beauty to it. That you begin to experience when you stop living in your interpretations of events, when you stop living in your narration. Whether those events are present of the past or the imagined future. So this exercise of removing the meaning, removing the narration, the narrator, and endeavoring to experience things directly, experience your own being directly, without any narration, without any good or bad or right or wrong or judgment, or, you know, I'm getting there, I'm not getting there, all these ways that we talk to ourselves, and then we believe whatever the talk says about ourselves. But the talk, the self-talk, it's just talk. It's like an empty, it's like a voice in a vast empty space. The voice thinks it's referring to something or someone, but it actually is just a voice. In the empty space of consciousness, in the infinity of consciousness, a voice arises in your mind, interprets events, assigns meaning to events, and then it disappears. And the more you come to recognize that you are not that personal self that your mind is talking to, that there isn't actually a self there that your mind is talking to. The self-talk is as much self as you'll ever have. The self-talk, talking to yourself about yourself, is as much self as you will ever have. Because this imagined self needs you to keep talking about it. Because it only exists in your mind, it only exists in your thoughts, in your projection. And as soon as you stop talking about it, it's gone. As soon as you stop thinking it into existence, it's not there anymore. Until you think it into existence again, you resurrect it literally out of emptiness, out of nowhere. You resurrect it, and there it is. And then you stop the self-talk for a moment. It stops. And there, where is the self? Where is that self when you're not thinking about yourself? At that moment, you're not a self. You're something else. You're not limited to your personhood. As I said earlier, it's more like you are a presence. Operating through personhood, see? So again, we're not trying to get rid of anything. You're not trying to get rid of personality. You're not trying to get rid of personhood. We're not diminishing your humanness. We're not even diminishing the mind. We're just extracting your identity from it, so that you come to be able to perceive the world of suchness, the world beyond all notions of self. The world of, as the Buddha said, nirvana, or Jesus called it the kingdom of heaven, where you see infinity peering out from everywhere, experiencing itself as everything. Experiencing itself as this moment, right here and now. What is it that's experiencing this moment? What is it in your experience? What is it that's experiencing this moment right now? See, you can't really name it. You can't say it's this or that. Any description would just be more mind. So you're just allowing yourself to come closer and closer back to the truth, the reality of your being. So play with these exercises a bit. See what it's like to have your experience, to experience things free of the meaning that the mind assigns to things, good, bad, or indifferent. And see what it's like just to sort of step into the suchness, the world experienced and your own being experienced, free of all of your interpretations, all of your descriptions, all of the ways the mind assigns meaning to them. And see what it's like to experience not your own being and the world at large, more in terms of a direct encounter with the suchness of things, with the reality of things, with the simplicity of each moment, unnarrated, untranslated by the mind. Play with that for the next several days, and it might really reveal some unusual and startling insights to you. Okay, namaste.